Ekhatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekhatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are opening up a vast and incredibly important literary world, one that, well, often gets sort of relegated to a footnote in conventional history classes.
Yeah, we're diving into Native American literature, and we're using the really comprehensive work of scholar Joy Porter as our guide. And here's the key thing right up front. Try to forget what you might think you know about the standard American literary canon.
Right.
Porter's work argues pretty forcefully that indigenous literature isn't just some small regional genre. It is a distinct, foundational, and really enduring tradition in its own right.
So our goal today is basically to give you a shortcut, a way into a more nuanced understanding of this material. By the end, hopefully, you'll see how this body of work is like fundamentally tied to indigenous sovereignty, cultural continuity, and frankly, it's pretty essential for anyone trying to get a handle on modern American culture and history.
And what's fascinating, I think, is how much this literature matters today, right now. It acts as this powerful correction to historical erasure, you know, pushing back against centuries of stereotypes.
Definitely.
But maybe most profoundly, it offers these alternative worldviews, especially when we think about our modern global challenges, like, say, the climate crisis.
That's a great point. So, okay, let's introduce our guy here, Joy Porter. She is a distinguished professor. Her field is indigenous and environmental history, and she's based at the University of Hull in the UK.
Right, and that UK perspective is actually quite significant. She's a leading non-native scholar, and she's working outside the typical American academic structure. That gives her a certain distance, maybe a clarity of vision.
Also, what does that distance allow?
Well, it lets her critique the structures, you know, the ones that previously excluded this literature, maybe without being quite so immersed in the same historical dynamics you find within U.S. institutions, while still being rigorous and respectful, of course.
So she acts as this sort of fantastic cultural bridge for the reader. Using an approach that combines history, literature, and cultural studies, it's a really solid interdisciplinary method.
And one that insists on presenting Native American literature, NA Lit, let's call it, on its own terms, not just, you know, comparing it against European standards all the time.
Okay, let's get into the core argument then. Porter presents NA Lit as having this kind of dual force.
Yeah, exactly. It serves simultaneously as active cultural preservation and as this continuous ongoing act of resistance against colonization and cultural suppression. But it's creative resistance, not just defensive.
And to really get that, the book asks us, the readers, to make a pretty big philosophical shift, doesn't it?
It really does. We have to expand what we even mean by literature. It's not just words written on a page. Porter insists we embrace oral traditions, what she and others call orature, and also ceremonial texts, works that blend ancient and modern elements, often quite seamlessly.
The sheer scope is, well, it's amazing. Porter takes you all the way from foundational orature, stuff that predates European contact.
Yeah.
All the way through the trauma of the boarding school era, and then into this remarkable literary renaissance that's been happening over the last, what, 60 years or so.
Yeah. And it's crucial, and you mentioned this, but it bears repeating, Porter constantly stresses NA Lit is not monolithic. You just can't talk about it as one single thing. We are talking about hundreds of distinct tribal nations, languages, worldviews, so you always have to look for that specificity.
Which takes us right to her key theoretical move, I think.
Yeah.
Confronting that Western bias, that assumption that writing equals literature.
Exactly. She immediately introduces and defines orature, the spoken word traditions.
But we need to be really clear here. Orature is way more than just simple storytelling or like folklore.
Oh, absolutely. Porter demonstrates that orature is this sophisticated, performative, often sacred system. It functions as law, as community history, as spiritual practice, as deep philosophy. It's the original legal and historical record for many peoples.
Binding them to their land, to each other.
Precisely. And the concept that kind of ties all this expression together, the one you hear everywhere in this field, is survivance.
Right. Coined by Gerald Visenor. It's a key lens for Porter.
It is. And survivance, it means more than just survival. It implies an active, ongoing process. Creative resistance, cultural adaptation. It's the persistent assertion of native presence and sovereignty. It means indigenous literature is inherently forward-looking.
Okay, but if we focus only on that creative resistance, is there maybe a risk? A risk of romanticizing the resilience and maybe overlooking the profound historical trauma that actually makes this resistance necessary. How does Porter handle that balance?
That's a critical question. And it's the tension she navigates throughout. Survivance acknowledges the historical violence, the attempted erasure, absolutely. But it refuses to let the narrative be framed only by victimhood or loss.
Oh.
It insists that the culture is alive, it's regenerating, often through the storytelling itself. It's really an assertion of ingenuity, of dynamic presence.
We see that ingenuity even in the really old traditional forms, right?
Yeah.
Like the creation stories.
Exactly. These aren't just quaint myths. They are foundational texts. They establish a tribe's worldview, its laws, its sacred connection to a very specific localized homeland. Everything flows from that.
And then you have the incredible complexity of the trickster tales.
Yeah.
Figures like Coyote or Raven. I mean, I love these stories because they're often hilarious.
They are.
But they're not just for laughs, are they? They deliver these incredibly complex moral, social lessons, exploring the boundaries of behavior, the ambiguities of human nature.
Yeah, they're deeply philosophical, often in surprising ways. And that necessity of survivance, it eventually drove the shift toward written forms, too. Porter shows how this became a strategic political tool.
How so?
Well, early indigenous authors used the colonizers' language, the colonizers' literary forms, things like life writing, autobiographies, protest literature, specifically to advocate for their rights.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Look at the Pequot minister, William Apes, way back in the 1830s. He used written sermons, his own autobiography, to directly challenge racist stereotypes. He argued eloquently for equality, using the religious and literary frameworks of the dominant culture itself.
Wow, the 1830s. That's incredible timing, nearly 200 years ago.
It is, right. It completely reframes our idea of American protest literature.
And speaking of reframing, Porter also asks us to look at treaties different. We usually see them as just, you know, dry legal documents, kind of boring.
Yeah, but she highlights them as these key sites of literary and textual struggle. It's where totally different cultural understandings of land, of ownership, of language, the sacredness of the spoken word versus the written word, where all that just violently crashed.
Fascinating. Okay, so let's fast forward then to the modern era. That struggle finds this, well, almost explosive expression in the Native American Renaissance, kicking off late 1960s.
That's right. And the big catalyst was N. Scott Momede winning the 1969 Pulitzer Prize for Housemaid of Dawn. That award, it basically legitimized the field for mainstream readers and academia, changed everything.
And what were the key themes emerging then?
This Renaissance period focused heavily on themes of healing and cultural reclamation. A perfect example is Leslie Marmon Silko's Ceremony. You have a protagonist, a veteran suffering from war trauma.
PTSD, essentially.
Right. And he doesn't find healing through Western psychiatric methods. He finds it by returning to traditional Pueblo ceremonies and, crucially, storytelling. The literature itself is shown as a form of powerful, necessary cultural medicine.
That idea, storytelling as medicine, that's incredibly powerful. And we see that power continuing today, right? In contemporary movements.
Absolutely. Think about indigenous poetry. It often draws so deeply on the structures, the rhythms of traditional song and chant. You see this in poets like Joy Harjo, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And the growth of Native drama and theater is also vital because it actively subverts that long, awful history of terrible racist portrayals that dominated American film and stage for so long.
Okay, so after synthesizing all this material, Porter kind of distills the core messages down. You said four essential ideas.
Yeah, four key takeaways. The first is the inseparability of land, language, and identity.
And this is where we see maybe the most profound difference from typical Western narratives, right? Porter shows us the land isn't just some passive backdrop.
Not at all. It's often a central character, sometimes a relative, a living entity. This relationship fundamentally shapes everything, plot, character, spiritual life in the stories.
Okay, what's the second theme?
The second is cultural continuity and adaptation. This completely pushes back against that old idea that indigenous cultures are just historical artifacts or that assimilation is somehow inevitable.
So it's not about being stuck in the past?
No. Authors maintain their essential cultural values, their worldviews, while cleverly adapting the forms of expression. It proves that preservation and innovation actually work together. They aren't opposed.
Makes sense. Third theme.
Third is sovereignty and self-determination. Simply put, the very act of writing, of publishing, of asserting an indigenous narrative, that act itself is inherently political.
How so?
It challenges the colonial historical record. It asserts the inherent right of indigenous nations to define themselves, their own history, their own future. It's reclaiming the narrative.
Right. And the final one, You mentioned it before.
Yes, and it's worth hammering home. Diversity over monolithic stereotypes. Porter really stresses this. You can never, ever generalize about Native American literature.
Because there are hundreds.
Hundreds of distinct nations, languages, literary traditions, specificity. Always seek the specificity.
You know, one real strength of Porter's work is how she manages to capture these huge ideas in really concise statements. Let's maybe look at three key ideas that really capture her insights.
Good idea. Okay. The first one directly tackles that definition challenge we talked about earlier. She basically says, to understand Native American literature, we must first redefine literature itself. It begins not with the written word on a page, but with the power of the spoken word orator, which serves as law, history, and ceremony.
Wow. Yeah, that line alone just challenges the whole Western hierarchy, doesn't it? Written versus oral history. It reminds you that oral tradition is functional, it's sacred, it's not just entertainment or some historical curiosity.
Exactly. And the second idea reinforces that key concept, survivance. Native American literature is more than a record of survival. It is an ongoing act of survivance. This is a creative resistance that uses storytelling to defy colonial narratives of disappearance.
Which forces the focus onto agency, right? It tells you these authors are actively building a future, not just, you know, passively lamenting the past. It's about presence.
Precisely. And finally, this one. Native American writers navigate between worlds, translating not just languages, but entire worldviews for diverse audiences.
That highlights the incredible responsibility and maybe the difficulty these writers face. They're translating really complex indigenous concepts, cosmologies, sacred values.
For readers who might be operating under completely different cultural assumptions, it's a profound act of intellectual and cultural translation.
So, okay, let's step back from the book itself for a moment. How can we, you know, in our daily lives, actually use this knowledge? What are the practical applications?
Well, the most immediate one, I think, is in critical media literacy. Once you start understanding these narratives, these core concepts like the land identity connection, survivance, you're instantly better equipped. You can identify and critique the harmful stereotypes, the historical inaccuracies that, let's be honest, still run rampant in popular media, movies, TV news. You start asking, okay, whose perspective is missing here? Whose story isn't being told?
That's powerful. And it loops back to the environmental themes too, doesn't it? That idea of the land as a living relative, not just a resource to be exploited.
Absolutely. It offers a necessary and I think profound alternative to the dominant Western resource exploitation model. It should encourage all of us to reflect more deeply on our own ethics of land stewardship, our own sense of place, wherever we are. And ultimately, the book provides the essential counter narrative to the conventional, often colonial version of U.S. history. By centering Indigenous voices, you just gain a more complex, more honest, frankly, more truly informed understanding of contemporary issues, which is foundational, really, to being a thoughtful global citizen.
You know, what really stuck with me most was that power of orature. The idea that storytelling isn't just like an art form, it's a sacred responsibility, a tool for cultural justice that literally carries the community forward through time. That's quite something.
Yeah. For me, the ultimate takeaway is how Porter's work proves that these literary traditions aren't historical footnotes. Not at all. They are living, dynamic forces. They offer these unique, vital perspectives on universal human experiences and on global challenges like climate change, identity, governance. It's just a vibrant testament to resilience and adaptability.
Porter's work really demonstrates that engaging with Native American literature, it transforms your understanding of what literature can be, what it can do. The challenge for us, the readers, isn't just to, you know, read these works, but to actively listen, to listen for the orature that's embedded within them. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.